Fernando Pablo, the guitarist and leader of Los Yukinos, noted, quote, "Yes, a lot of people from other states of the Mexican Republic are now getting familiar with the chilena music here because now it's coming in stronger. The people from other states discriminated against us for being Oaxacans, for being small, or for not speaking Spanish well and all that. But now it's changing a bit. It's favoring the people from Oaxaca for our music," end quote. Mendoza's words may help explain chilena's growing popularity. He said, quote, "The accordion for us, it's more universal. The accordion in the world of Norteño music, it's the same from Texas to Oaxaca. So in bringing the chilena to the accordion, I apply them to people from all over Mexico," end quote. In other words, although chilena itself may be explicitly Oaxacan, the sound of the accordion became a common denominator for farm workers from various regions of Mexico, making chilena more accessible to non-Oaxacans. To put it in Kay Chalamet's terms, the reinterpreted chilena has assembled farm workers from various regions, going beyond the community of descent and producing a community of affinity through the sound of the accordion. So Lopez, Mendoza, and Los Yukinos, the three actors that I just introduced to you, showed how reinterpretation and circulation of chilena on the accordion articulate the diverse experiences and aspirations of Oaxacan migrant workers. It allowed Mendoza to perform his senses of belonging as an Oaxacan on constant migration from his childhood, for whom the sound of the accordion is constitutive of his migrant identity, while Los Yukinos strategically incorporated the instrument to embrace and appeal to mainstream Mexican-Americanness. Here we see at least two forces at work in negotiating the sense of belonging as a mixtec working in San Joaquin Valley. On one hand, for Oaxacans working alongside other Mexicans who identify with Norteño music and being interpolated as Mexican at large by the U.S. society, incorporation of the accordion was an embracing of the index of mainstream Mexicanness. On the other hand, for mixtecs who are racialized and discriminated against by their peers from other Mexican regions, performance of chilena amplified the sense of belonging as indigenous Oaxacan. Thus, playing chilena, their musical heritage, on the accordion, the sonic index of mainstream Mexicanness, enabled them to express the contradictions in the everyday experiences of Oaxacan migrant workers' lives. As chilena circulates through the recordings and airwaves, reinterpreted chilena has provided opportunities to make additional income or organize the community to raise funds to support hometowns on the other side of the border. At the same time, its growing popularity and sonic presence has arguably helped the social stigma of the indigenous Oaxacans. On the move from its inception, chilena music's continued transnational circulation and the new accordion-based rendering of chilena in California today gives us insight into the generativity of a musical practice in a state of cultural emergence. I'm thinking about Raymond Williams' use of the word cultural emergence. Although chilena has not gained presence in mainstream radio or record industries, it's precisely this state of emergence that provides possibilities for cultural actors who have diverse and sometimes conflicting economic, political, and aesthetic aspirations to network, mediate, and mobilize among themselves. So to conclude, I hope this ethnographic analysis of the accordion among the Oaxaca migrant workers has highlighted how the accordion is not incidental to, but rather constitutive of, social interactions and relations. The unique articulation of the always already transnational musical genre of chilena, the accordion, and the airwave has profound affective, social, and economic effects on the Oaxaca migrant workers community in Central Valley. As George Lipset said, the accordion is not just a musical instrument, but an instrument of socialization, its assimilation, and upward mobility. Furthermore, as we've seen, the sonorous material object incites and compels emergent creative practices from its owners and listeners. The assemblage of agentful object, which are imbued with locally and historically grounded meanings, the materiality of sounds, which produces tangible and deeply affective impact, and the people themselves, whose creative practices and relations with other objects and humans makes possible the creative transcultural processes, enabling the politics of the emergent. In closing, I'd like to leave you with one of my favorite quotes from our commentator, George Lipset. In some ways, witnesses have to speak, testimonies have to be heard. People cannot remain totally silent, but they often don't have citizenship, they don't have the English language, and they don't have the ability to write. They work with the tools that are open to them in the arenas that they can access. So an instrument, and especially an instrument like the accordion, which is an incredible storehouse of memory, many different emotions and many different ways of being and thinking about the world, is a logical form to express those contradictions of immigrant life. Thank you.
Great, thank you. That was great.
Any
questions or stories?
I have a question, not a story. Well, I just thought this, I just think this is absolutely fascinating, and I actually have a million questions and a million comments.
Great.
And I thank you very much. But I think my first question has to do with your Oaxacan case study, mm-hmm. and the use of the accordion as, forgive me, as an instrument of assimilation mm-hmm. and incorporation. And whether, because you started by talking about the Oaxacan population in the Central Valley, the Mexican-American, but do you see via the use of the accordion, Oaxacans becoming Americans or becoming Mexican-Americans?
Mexican-Americans. They rarely have contact with non-Mexican-Americans
mm-hmm. mm-hmm. okay.
in their daily lives. And so, but they do understand that the Norteño music has become, sort of has broken into the mainstream popular, you know, radio stations or pop charts mm-hmm. in the United States at large. So that is sort of the assimilated and accepted American-ness available to the Mexican-American population.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Great.
Yeah. And so, if I could just take another minute. So, related to that, I know you said that it is that that the music is primarily instrumental, but that there were some lyrics. Mm-hmm. So, did you? Are there any themes in terms of what the songs are about?
Most of the songs I didn't do extensive lyrical analysis, mm-hmm. But whenever I sort of chose to listen and analyze them, they're mainly just shout out to their hometowns.
Okay. And so that's still distinctively Oaxacan.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And that's what I was interested
in. It's not so much about narratives, it's a lot of interjections about certain places and landmarks in certain towns and villages. Okay. That's very popular.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Kim?
I thought this was terrific. I have two questions. One is coming from an art historian's point of view. The decoration on these goose boxes mm-hmm. is terrific. And so I'm wondering whether the coloration is sometimes local to a village, or have you gotten to think about, you know, if somebody has a red and green and pink kind mm-hmm. of coloring, mm-hmm. is that maybe what their village
The guy who had red, white, and blue.
Carlos has
that one here. I just noticed yeah. the specific decorations, and I wondered if you thought about MLS.
Sure.
Or maybe that's just the way they come commercially from the makers. I don't know enough.
Yeah, so they do, especially Tejanos, not necessarily them, but Tex, you know, Mexican Texans, they have attachment to German three-row button accordions. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, accordion production isn't readily available.
But are they hand-colored? That's what I'm wondering.
No, they come already that way, but those European manufacturers, some of them are now in China, but most of them know their market, and they just they cater to the Mexican musicians by creating those Mexican flag patterns or others. Yeah. Uh-huh. So it's their strategic marketing towards Mexican or
so
Tejano musicians.
Market to market towards them. So mm-hmm. that's already that. Yeah.
Do they personalize it from there though, or is it kind of like?
I have not among them. I have seen plenty of accordionists, you know, tricking up their accordions and putting rhinestones and putting their name on it.
Right.
But I haven't seen that so much among the Mexican mm-hmm. and Oaxacan musicians.
And I guess my second question was, I'm really fascinated by the fact that you have the transmission through radio mm-hmm. and through performance and also through making CDs and marketing mm-hmm. them. So, you know, thinking about Raymond Williams, I was just wondering whether the marketing tells you something about the gradual assimilation. You say they're being marketed not only to the Chilean audience, the Oaxacans, but now to the mainstream Mexican-American audience. Is that breaking out into a mainstream North American audience in any way? In the same way that Putumayo, there's certain
right.
certain ethnic, you know, South American bands right. that have done that. I don't know why that happens or why it doesn't. So that was a question I had.
Mm-hmm. As far as I know, probably this documentary was the first time Chilena music, especially on the accordion, was right. on the North American airwaves. Mm-hmm. And I can't say that Chilena music has quite made it into the North American mm-hmm. market either. And when I say market, also, Carlos Mendoza always says, oh yeah, my CD sold so well, 2 million something. But that's downloads. Mm-hmm. His music has become so popular, and it has been downloaded a lot, especially back in Mexico, in Oaxaca. And he has an anecdote of how his mother was back home in a market, and she heard his son's music, and she said, oh, that's my son's music from California. Nobody believed her because it was so popular. So this
making money off of
this intermediation
increasingly, that's the measure of all musical genres.
Except that
how much
he's
it's
not,
downloaded, not... You know,
right, but it's not themselves. Leading to any, you know, economic
right.
surplus.
Well, that was my question. Is right. it leading him? I mean, he's not getting any money from those downloads.
No, not necessarily.
Yeah.
So the Chilena demand still remains within the community for family functions, okay. primarily.
I was interested also about the physical form, but going also on that into the style of play. Is mm-hmm. there any sort of how they actually, you know, grip it or hold it or play the accordion? Is there any difference from, you know, someone like Mendoza to the band, being that they are just recent migrants, or, you know, and sort of adopting it? Is there anything that's sort of distinctive? Mm-hmm. Maybe
that's a good question. Now that I've noticed, I would say that him in Los Yuquinos, he, as I said, you know, primarily learned Norteño music because that's the moneymaker
yeah.
genre, right? So then they do have sort of a particular gesture, sort of flashy gesture that they do between verses. And because he does that a lot, he's technically more advanced than Carlos Mendoza. And so his Chilena performance also is quite flashy. It's got sort of a Norteño influence maybe on in his fingering perhaps, but I can't, and there aren't too many accordion Chilena players
okay.
either, so I can't quite generalize yet, but I think it's a very deeply personal differences, less about social
okay.
differences.
I have a question about the accordion
uh-huh.
as a commercial object as mm-hmm. opposed to the music itself. If you'll bear with me for a brief accordion story. I grew up in a poor neighborhood in the 1950s, and a big company came through mm-hmm. the Stancato School of Accordion.
Yep.
And I, looking back, I think of myself as a target and as a victim, but I'm not sure. I might just be paranoid and not appreciative of a good experience, but they came through and they...
Where was this at also?
This was in Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon?
A small okay. black population, but we all knew each other, 15,000 or so. And they tried to persuade all single mothers like mine that this was a bridge to the piano.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that... And we didn't have space for a piano. We couldn't afford a piano. I was sort of one of the almost equal breadwinners, just with a paper route. Well, they sold my mother. I took accordion lessons for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And had to stop because I could no longer afford both the lessons and the accordion. So I stuck with the accordion. I still have the accordion.
Yes.
Beautiful blue curl tone.
Wow.
But.
Oh, I wish you brought it.
I know.
I don't have it here in Boston. I always wondered if this wasn't just a big scam, because I had to stop taking lessons. I wanted to buy the accordion. I never got back to taking lessons again. I did experience a couple of occasions where I played in 100 accordion orchestra.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
So I can still feel, and I can still play. How much is that dog in the window? Body memory.
Yes.
You know, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yep.
But I was just wondering, in the community you studied, was there any concept at all that this was also a way of social mobility in terms of education, in terms of having the kinds of abilities
yep.
that are associated
absolutely
with high
yeah.
class.
That wasn't a one single scam in your town. That was everywhere in the United
oh,
States
okay.
in the
I
40s and
better.
50s. It was mostly in Italian neighborhoods. It started in Philadelphia. I mean, it was available through, you know, Sears catalogs, and there would be accordion salesmen knocking down on the, you know, on the doors, and basically they wanted to make accordion, as you said, a step towards more educated. It was an instrument of assimilation, right? Mm-hmm. That's cheaper than the piano, but it can be as sophisticated as piano. And so a bunch of people started this association, which still exists today, American Accordion Association. And they notated everything. Until then, accordion was mostly for folk or vernacular music that didn't require literacy. But they wanted to vamp the accordion up to this respectable instrument. So there was a lot of institutionalized investment in making the accordion a respectable middle class instrument. So that definitely was part of that. And I also love that you highlighted this, the muscle memory part of it, accordion.
Yeah.
In the beginning, in the billboard, one man said, it's the only instrument you hug, right? And it's extremely intimate, it's so close, and whatever you do, whatever your movement comes out, it manifests itself.
Squeeze.
Exactly, mm-hmm. right? And that the airflow picks up every little movement of your upper body and your arm, or even your legs. And so that, I think, that intimacy that you have with this physical object and the player has something to do with this particularly strong emotional responses people seem to have about this accordion instrument.
So I have two things. First one, kind of a response to what you said. It's not that unlike the school band movement of, you know, around
mm-hmm.
that same
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
A big part of the reason that it exists is because the instrument manufacturers needed a market, so they, I mean, if you know the story of the Music Man, then
yeah.
mm-hmm. it's not that far from mm-hmm. you know, the truth. I mean, that's, call it a scam, call it a clever marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of...
Well, the big push for encyclopedias, home encyclopedias, mm-hmm. too, that they would go around and every family had to
have
this either World Book. Britannica, whatever.
But who were those manufacturers? Where were they?
Italy.
They were Italian manufacturers.
Yeah. And then
that had been for a long time.
Yes.
And then they said, here's a market that we should.
And then Italian Americans established their own factories in the United States.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So then the other thing, I'm just wondering, you said that there's sort of a social mobility factor
mm-hmm.
to all this. So something that is one sort of competing theory is that when you have musics of from different cultures, or that in particular that music and art are cultural artifacts,
mm-hmm.
and that they are representative of unequal social
mm-hmm.
factors. So in this case, these indigenous Mexican could be considered the lower
mm-hmm.
class, you know, the lower class, their music, same thing, with the Norteña being the upper class, mm-hmm. more social elites, at least relative to one another. The idea, though, of this theory is that by teaching these different, that basically what you're doing is reproducing and reinforcing those inequalities, mm-hmm. so that in fact the lower class really learn that that is their place. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of competing with the idea that there's some social mobility, or is it more that you see a desire for social mobility that never really?
Right. I think
happens.
It's the plane, the master's tool, right? Mm-hmm. So of course you are in some way reproducing this power differentials, mm-hmm. and they are on an unequal footing. So you are buying into this discourse of accordion, and then the mainstream Americans are the superior, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they're you know, strategic. They are using this, particularly this band, strategically for their economic gain, mm-hmm. more gigging opportunities. Therefore, they can use that profit to then record their own music, mm-hmm. Chilena music, which will then be made available to Oaxacan communities through the radio. So I think this pattern, this dynamics, is often seen in a lot of world music market, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of ethnic musicians often incorporate certain musical elements from the Western music, mm-hmm. as a way to make it more available, but also that's a way to promote themselves. So I think there's a tension there, but ultimately, you know, it's serving certain purposes while reproducing that.
Well, look,
the structure.
The picture of Carlos Mendoza sitting at mixing on his computer, that when I saw that, that's a long way from the fields of Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, right. But it's right outside, you know, that field, the picture,
yeah,
that you saw. It's right in
the California
house.
Field.
But there he is with all of the trappings of American consumptionism, and he's, you know, mm-hmm. got it in his hand now because of the accordion, right?
Yep. Yep.
Right, so isn't the point sort of that there was that, there is that class distinction between Oaxacan and mm-hmm. the other, more, as you call them, more mainstream Mexican, but in the context of both in California or mm-hmm. in Americans, I mean, it's sort of your question, are they becoming Mexican or Mexican-American? I mean, in that context, that kind of changes that class dynamic, right? I mean, from the perspective of American society, they're all Mexicans,
exactly,
right? And so that has an effect on their...
Right.
Where they assimilate in the socioeconomic scheme of things.
Right, and the way they're assimilating is also not just simply, oh, now we're going to be just like mainstream Mexicans, because they are still playing Chilena music.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you said some of the mainstream Mexican population, so they're becoming a little bit Oaxacan American.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so that this second visit...
I mean,
visit,
they would probably never own that,
yeah,
but...
Right.
They're getting Oaxacanized,
yep.
in the American context.
And that becomes the sound that unites farm workers from other regions. Mm-hmm. And sort of, you know, reinforcing their identities.
Do they tend to be other poor regions like Michoacán?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Michoacán
poor,
and Guerrero. Exactly.
Poor. So it's those, not the most northern.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about the history of the instrument. Did it spring up in Italy and then migrate northward through the European countries, or what?
Well, it spread pretty quickly across the European continent as soon as it was invented. Production remained pretty much centralized in Italy. But then with immigration and colonialism, it just went everywhere.
You know, do you know when San Francisco made the accordion?
Very
it's
efficient. Recent.
It's very recent, because mm-hmm. I think there's probably the Italian diaspora connection here.
Oh, yeah.
The first wave of Italian immigrants, before they came streaming in from southern Italy to the East Coast, mm-hmm. were northern Italians settling in San Francisco.
Exactly.
And I'm sure they, you know, tried to get people to, you know, to market the accordion.
Right.
And...
Huh. And is it linked to the vineyards?
I'm sorry?
Is it linked to the vineyards?
Somewhat, yeah. They were the early wine
wineries.
Were
they
Italian.
Northerners?
Northern Italy, right.
Northern Italian.
Right.
Who's that? Just has a new book out on the Italian winemakers of California. I think of the author's name.
Well, there's still quite a bit of regional production. There's some famous accordion maker up in Seattle mm-hmm. who caters to the Scandinavian Americans. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of accordion makers in Texas that do the Mexican, mm-hmm. You know, most of their accordions are this bright color, whereas
right.
the Scandinavian accordions are usually the piano accordions, yeah. and they're black
yep.
or maybe white, but not mm-hmm. all, maybe a little bit of red, but not multicolored and all that stuff.
Right.
So.
I have a question kind of about the approach, I guess. Mm-hmm. Do you think that a similar approach could be applied with other transnational instruments, like maybe the guitar, something like that, mm-hmm. or is there something unique about the accordion in this case?
That's a good question. I keep thinking about it too. I mean, guitar is everywhere, mm-hmm. but it has been so standardized physically right. and mm-hmm. stylistically, mm-hmm. and somehow it hasn't quite become as indigenized as accordion has been in different parts of the world, relatively speaking.
I think there's been work on the fiddle, though, that's kind of similar to what I'm hearing you present about the accordion.
Right.
I was also thinking about the accordion as a way of expressing cultural hybridity, mm-hmm. and whether that is sort of an inherent in musical instruments of all kinds, or are there certain ones like the guitar or the fiddle that maybe more folk, more accessible mm-hmm. Musical instruments that would lend themselves mm-hmm. to this level of exchange? Yeah.
Brass band is a really good example.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
What is?
Brass bands.
The sousaphone.
Yeah.
Right on.
The sousaphone. Yeah, it's, I mean, you have Rajasthani wedding band to this street musical practice that I'm writing a book on in Japan is also a descendant of brass band. So I think a lot of instruments that spread through colonialism and immigration has been picked up and become localized, but many of them were instruments of the imperialism or colonial power, right? Brass bands, violin also is a classical instrument. But accordion never had that prestige to begin with. It was always this lower class, popular instrument of the people. And I think that has something to do with the fact that it has become embraced in completely different ways all over the world, perhaps more so than other instruments. But I'll be curious to find out other instruments that could have a story.
Yeah,
like
I think
this.
About the banjo too. Mm-hmm. Kind of
oh,
has
the banjo. That's
is also I mean kind of a low class thing.
Yeah.
Maybe not as transnational as mm-hmm. guitar.
Somebody's done work on the intersection of African American and Irish immigrant
mm-hmm.
banjo.
Yeah.
Right. I think. Yeah.
In Morocco now too.
Yeah. Morocco. Right.
It's now a traditional instrument in Morocco. Mm. Banjo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, by contrast. The bagpipe never made it.
Bagpipe,
funny about
the bagpipe.
But bagpipes are interesting because there are lots of bagpipes, you know, in folk.
Sure.
But
yeah.
I mean, Spanish and they're really bagpipes are.
Yeah, Eastern Europe.
A lot of
it's
everywhere.
The kilt that just doesn't crossover.
French bagpipes. Uh-huh.
This study actually never came to my mind until you presented it, and I was curious. I'm from Maine, and I have ties to Acadian
uh-huh.
culture,
yep.
and I'm wondering if you researched or know of research that's very similar to this into that
to Cajun context.
Yeah, and in Acadians in general, like with the Quebec connections. And
you have to read Accordion Crimes.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Fun.
It's oh yeah.
That's
well,
a good book.
I don't know. Actually, I have never read a literature about how accordions got to Acadia.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole lot written on Acadia to Louisiana.
Players in Maine, and
yeah.
at one point
right.
where I used to teach, they actually brought in a ton of accordion players to march in a parade together.
Mm. Maybe it's the Francophone connection. Yeah. You have Zydeco and Acadian. Yeah. All have roots in the Creolization of Louisiana.
Right. So, but the Cajun music didn't really come to be, and they didn't really become interested in the accordion until they got to Louisiana. So I assume when they got to Arcadia first, accordion wasn't part of it. Mm. And perhaps some Irish influences nearby may have introduced the accordion to them, but I think it's actually through Cajuns going back to Canada that they started to incorporate the accordion. That's my theory, I think.
I was fascinated by the band that was playing the show in the backyard. They were raising money to send back to Mexico. Mm-hmm. How often do events like that happen in comparison to them playing at an actual club or something?
I think, unfortunately, I haven't been able to live alongside them to know intimately, but it seemed like a rare event. I mean, they do those club gigs almost every weekend, but it seemed like there was a lot of effort being put into organizing that event, and it involved a lot of people. You know, a lot of mothers came out and cooked all the food, and so that sort of communal organization must take some time to organize. I would say not as frequent.
And just another question about Mendoza recording in his garage.
Yeah.
So is he just recording himself, or is he opening up his resources for other musicians? I mean, is it a resource he's sharing?
Yeah. That's part of his income now as a producer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of, I mean, there aren't too many studios as sophisticated as his, even though it's pretty dingy. So a lot of people come and pay, and then he records it. But it wasn't just him that had a home recording set up. Even further away, among Zapotec Oaxacans, I visited his house, I think I might have, and they also had their home recording set up. This one.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Oops.
Video. Let's see.
This is another house. They're not Mixteco speaking Oaxacans, these are Zapotec. Oh, you can't quite see the computer. There's a computer right here. Yeah, so they, you know, it's a pretty humble house and living they have, but they do invest in all the technological device they need to record and disseminate through the internet.
Do you have any, have you seen any examples yet of any crossovers among the Zydeco, you know, within California, Zydeco, Chilena, and maybe the you mentioned Arabic.
I would do it. No, I don't think so.
Mm. Nothing.
These are quite
isolated. They're right now. They're isolated. Yeah. Are they? And they're because they're not all in the Central Valley, right?
No.
Yeah.
Right,
okay.
Right.
That's the next generation.
Just two things. Number one, is there like a podcast or something available online for the entire documentary?
So if you go to squeezeboxstories.com, thank you. you can listen to the whole story and their slideshows and things like that.
Especially I think that interview was interesting with the Arabic because I never even thought of that before, so that would be interesting. The other thing I just wanted to add kind of on the side note about people who are convinced, especially by the accordions as a transitional instrument to the piano. Uh-huh. My father's side of the family is Italian, and my grandmother was an accordion, but basically was sold by a traveling salesman to buy a pump organ, which one of my relatives still had, and it kind of sounds like an accordion, but not nearly as nice. And we kind of sat in the corner of the living room, and it wasn't at my grandmother's house until I figured out how to use it, and I think after playing like Mary Had a Little Lamb one too many times on that wheezing thing, it disappeared and went down.
Oh, you can still fix it.
Yeah, let's figure out who still has it.
That's great. Well, those pump or Italian pump organs are the ancestor of bandoneon in Argentina. that's what turned into bandoneon, which is a cousin of the accordion, but a lot more complex.
So I was wondering if maybe the music lives more, leads more of a transnational existence than the musicians, like despite the popularity of this new musical form in Mexico, it didn't seem like these musicians were getting to travel back home or travel in northern Mexico. And I don't know if that was true.
Yeah, I think absolutely, especially with an institutionalized medium like La Hora Mixteca, the radio show, which is made to create this network, transnational network, back and forth through sound, right, between families and communities throughout the United States and throughout Mexico. So yeah, it's quite powerful how one person's, you know, garage production can really shape the soundscapes and sense of belonging as Oaxacan, and how it could be reshaped and create new alliances.
So the migrants that these, like Carlos Mendoza was a migrant farm worker, and he still has that by his house. I mean, is he sort of tied to the land?
Yeah, pretty much. This is the first time he kind of settled in one location. And I had the great opportunity to bring him up to San Francisco last month, and that was the first time he visited the city. But I had I was asked by California Historical Society to talk about that documentary, and they gave us budget to bring him up.
Great.
So that was really his foray into playing to gringos and making his music available to Northern American audience. And he made some sales that day, so who knows?
That's great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was fabulous.